Welcome to the Archippus Podcast.
As members of Archippus, we want to encourage followers of Jesus to pursue the work God has called them to do.
Jesus calls us to follow him, and in our call to follow, we receive a call to work.
And we want every follower of Christ to recognize that they have already received a call to do good work for the kingdom of God.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Archippus Podcast. My name is Alexander Hildebrand, and as always, I am joined by the wonderful Mason Powell.
Hey, everyone.
And today we're going to continue this discussion on the theology of work, how God has given us a purpose right here, right now, on this earth, and he's called us to do good work for his kingdom. And what we're doing through this series is we're just kind of working through the biblical meta-narrative. We're just kind of starting at the very beginning, working through the whole story of the Bible, and just seeing how this whole concept of work and a calling and purpose really shines through the story of the Bible, the story focused on God as a creator and how he's created us as human beings to do good work, but we have failed in that. And so he has given us a savior in Jesus who redeems us and restores us and works in us in such a way that we can take up this mission again. So today, what we're really going to focus on is the story of the patriarchs. So we're going to continue through Genesis. And Mason, I want to kind of just throw this to you real quick at the beginning. When you think of the story of the patriarchs and how it relates to this idea of work and calling, what's the first thing that comes to mind for you?
That's a good question. One of the first things that comes to my mind is, oh, I am so thankful I'm not them.
Okay, how so?
Like, think about it. Like, you know, imagine being Abraham. And you have probably grown up, they say Ur of Chaldea, which is, you know, in his day was what Babylon was called. So he's living in Babylon, the place of that was known for the Tower of Babel, a whole place that's all about, you know, of this evil of trying to dethrone God, basically. And they have this history where God just kind of broke things apart and scattered them. And then one day God speaks to Abraham, and we can probably imagine there's been no word about this God, Yahweh. There's been no interactions with him. No one is following him. And all of a sudden he gets this call saying, hey, I want you to leave behind everything, your way of life, your comforts, your security. I want you to say goodbye to everything. And I want you to follow me to a distant foreign land and just trust me. And you know, for us, we could read the Abraham story and we can read it with a lot of encouragement, and we can read the same thing with Isaac and Jacob, and we can be like, oh, okay, don't be stupid like them and, you know, be good. But if you think about it, they had no Bible. They had, they didn't even have the Ten Commandments yet. They're just out there trusting. And, you know, when everyone else is following a different way, they're like, hey, we had this interaction with this other God and he speaks to us about like once every 10 years. To tell us something to do or a place to go. And we're just kind of sitting, twiddling our thumbs. Like for us as Christians nowadays, Jesus followers, like we have these historical documents of the Gospels and Jesus, and we can daily read into them. And we can daily, you know, read of even from former church fathers and their interactions with this God. But for Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they are like the beginning. And so for me, I'm like, man, I'm so glad I was not there at the beginning, because like you have nothing to rely on, like no spiritual mentors, no friends or allies. It's just you. And if you read their stories with that mindset, like it makes sense of why they kind of do some crazy, stupid stuff sometimes, because they're just like, hey, our work is rather unique. You know, for them, it's not like a daily kind of work. Like God calls them to something that is unique, that's special, but it also foreshadows what's to come later on. So what do you have thoughts on that, Alex? What about you?
Well, I think what you said is really interesting, this idea when we think of like our calling today and the work that we're supposed to do today. Like, I work with students a lot, with high school students, college age, young adults, and this idea of like, oh, what's my life purpose, or what should I go do? What's my calling? That comes up a lot. And it's interesting because we live at a time, I think, of anxiousness where, at least for me personally, I get that question more and more and more from kids who like have no idea. I have no idea what I should be doing. But we live at this point in history where like you have so many options. And from a Christian perspective, you know, the question of, well, what does God want me to do? Like, we have so many resources. Like you just said, we have the whole Bible. We have this whole Word of God. You know, we are living with all this history. There's more resources than ever. And yet this question seems like it's coming up more and more today than it was yesterday. But when you look at these early stories, when you go back to the beginning of the Bible, it's fascinating to think about. They did not have much. All they had was really like the oral tradition passed down through their family. You know, they had so little. But yet at the same time, it seems very personal. Like when we begin Abram's story, Abram is hearing the word of the Lord. Like God is coming to Abram and he's giving him this call. And so there's very little, but it's also personal. And I don't necessarily know if I have a point to make about that. I think it's just kind of this interesting comparison to today where we have all these resources, but I don't know if young Christians are being taught and discipled in such a way where they recognize the personal nature of God and how involved he is in their calling and in the work that he's drawing them to do.
I think it's a good point, you know, to think about is the patriarchs really show the personal side of God. Because here he is, he's looking at this creation that he made to be beautiful, and it led to the Tower of Babel, and it led to this ultimate betrayal, this ultimate distrust. And, you know, we would, if you read just the first 11 chapters of Genesis, and that's all we had, say, of, you know, the scriptures, we would be like, okay, so game over. God is tired. He's going to start smiting everybody. Like, it sounds like that, like almost like God is at a pinnacle moment where, you know, what is he going to do to, is he just going to hit the reset button? But rather instead, we get to see this, the personal desire for a relationship of this God who's like, no, I'm going to fix things, but it's going to be incredibly intimate, incredibly personal, and very, very slow of, I'm going to pick one man and I'm going to foster a relationship with him. And he will be the only man in the entire world who I will have a relationship with. And then eventually I'll have a relationship with two people. You know, he's going to have, you know, his wife, and then there's going to be three with his son, and then so on and so on. Like here's this God who's wanting to be so intimate and so personal that he's all right with being so patient at the same time. So I think that's a good point to bring up is, you know, especially for you as a youth pastor, you deal a lot with students who are questioning, what is my purpose and what does God want to do in my life? If we look at the patriarchs as a model, it first shows this God who is wanting to be personal. And if you think about it, like in Genesis chapter 12, when he calls Abram, God's call to him is saying, I want to do the work for you and I want to do all these things. And I'm just asking for you to want to be part of this journey and this story. So he tells Abram, like, hey, I'm going to bless you. You're going to be a blessing to all the nations. You know, you're going to have a nation of your own. You're going to have a land of your own. And I think the only time I can recall Abram actually had to do something other than, you know, the future story of Abraham and Isaac and sacrificing your son and all that stuff. But it starts off where Abraham's like, okay, let's pack up and let's go. And then after that, like, he's just sitting and waiting and trusting. And like, that's the kind of dynamic of this relationship with his God you see in Abraham. And I can certainly argue for Isaac and Jacob, it's the exact same thing where this God saying, I want to have a personal relationship with you where I do all the heavy lifting and I do all the work. And I'm just asking for you to want to be part of this journey and want to be part of this relationship. and trusts me in this regard.
Yeah, I love what you brought up about patience. I think maybe for today, and we'll see where this conversation goes, but I think that idea of patience might be the number one thing that I want people to leave with, is that Abraham is not the initiator. He's not the guy sitting there thinking like, I need to figure out what I'm supposed to do. I need to figure out my calling. I need to have some kind of, you know, purpose-filled life. He's not doing that. When we open to the story of Abraham, it begins in Genesis 12, and it's God initiating the conversation with Abram. You know, Genesis chapter 12, verse 1 says, "Now the Lord said to Abram," and then he gives him this command, "Go from your country, leave your relatives, leave your father's house, and go to the land which I will show you. And then I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you, I will curse. And in you, all of the families of the earth will be blessed." So God is the initiator. God is the one who's doing a lot of the work. Like you said, Abram does have the responsibility. If he needs to obey and listen and follow, you know, he needs to respond to God's command, and he needs to go and leave and go into this land. But God is the initiator. God's the one making the promise. God's the one doing the heavy lifting, you know, of I'm going to make you into a great nation. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to show you where you want to go. And so I think the number one, like, important thing that Abram needs to keep in mind, and then we need to keep in mind, as we, you know, think about this scripture, is that we have to be people who patiently wait on the Lord. You know, your calling, your purpose, the work that God wants you to do today, you don't just figure that out on your own. You can't force it. You know, you can't be the initiator. That's not how this relationship works between us and God. God is the initiator, and it's our calling, first and foremost, to be a people who patiently wait for him, who are willing to trust him, to trust in the leading of the Holy Spirit, to trust in his guidance. You know, that at the end of the day, we are limited, and we need to trust in a God who's far greater than us, to not only do the heavy work, but to even show us what that work is in the first place. And so if we are going to be a people who are trying to pursue Christ and to know what our purpose is, to know what our work is, I think it begins with that principle right there of being a patient people who wait on the Lord. And that's all throughout the Bible. You know, I think of the Psalms a lot. How many Psalms are there with that premise right there? Like Psalm 25 comes to mind. It says, I will wait on the Lord. I will lift my soul up to the Lord. It's the Lord that I will trust, that those who trust in the Lord will not be put to shame. And I think that our understanding of work and calling and purpose, it begins right there with that idea of patient trust and faithfulness.
So you're arguing then that patience is a form of work.
Well, that's our preacher quote for the day. That's our preacher quote right there. That'll preach.
One for every episode, right?
No, that's it. That's it. No, that is a great point. Like, if you look at the life of Abraham, who typically is characterized as a faithful person, right? Like, you can jump to Hebrews and the hall of faith, right? Abram is right there. Abraham is right there. You know, I think from now on, we're just going to call him Abraham, right? Like, because
that'd be easier.
We'll just call him Abraham. You know, he's characterized as this person of faith, which is really interesting, because when you actually read the full narrative of Abraham, there are plenty of times where he isn't trusting God and doesn't have faith.
Yeah, let's talk about those. Can you give some examples?
Well, I mean, if you're listening and you're unfamiliar with the story of Abraham, Abraham is this person who receives this promise from God. He receives this calling from God to go out into a land. God is going to guide him. God is going to direct him. God is going to bless him. And not only that, God is going to turn Abraham into a great nation, into a great people. And at the time, Abraham has no children. He has a wife, but he has no children, no descendants. But God is promising to give him descendants, and that those descendants will grow and grow and grow and become this great nation. And that nation is going to change the world. God's going to use this people to bless all of the families of all of the earth, right? And so the story of Abraham is centered around him having descendants, him having a family line. But there are multiple times where Abraham himself puts that in jeopardy. You know, there's a story where Abraham ends up deceiving some people, trying to keep, you know, himself safe, and he ends up giving his wife away to someone else, and that puts the whole plan in jeopardy.
10 out of 10, do not recommend.
There's another point where Abraham and his wife are much older. They still don't have any children, and they try to force God's plan. They end up bringing one of their servants in so that Abraham can have a child with the servant, and it's just not God's plan at all whatsoever. They make a whole mess of it. And so to boil Abraham's story down very quickly, there are multiple moments like this where Abraham ends up working against God's plan. But if you look at the story as a whole and you see the whole journey and where Abraham ends up at the very end, he does end up trusting God and waiting for him. And I think that alone is a testament to we are not going to patiently trust God perfectly. We do not have perfect patience. I don't have perfect patience. You don't have perfect patience, Mason. And everyone listening doesn't have perfect patience. There are times where we fail. There are times where we don't trust God. There are times where instead of waiting on the Lord, we just do our own thing, you know? And even when we put God's plan into jeopardy, we can't ruin God's plan, because God's plan is perfect and God is sovereign and God accounts for our own failures. And so there's a moment that comes in our own lives where even when we fail to patiently trust God, we always have that opportunity to patiently trust God despite our failures. And so the question really is, like, every day of our lives, am I going to wait on the Lord? Am I going to trust God when the mission's clear, when the mission is unclear? Am I going to first and foremost trust that God is the initiator, that God is the one who does the heavy work, that God is the guide who shows me what that work is? You know, it's a life of trust and on waiting on the Lord. And so I think you're right, Mason. I think that idea that the first work we can do as followers of Jesus is the work of waiting, of being patient. Being patient is itself the work of the Christian. Trusting the Lord, waiting on the Lord. We don't think of that as work. We think of it as doing nothing. But that's so far from the truth. The truth is that the work of the Christian, first and foremost, begins with the work of waiting, waiting on the Lord.
So Abraham, you kind of mentioned this, He's later referred to in the New Testament in places like Hebrews as an example of faith. And by what you're saying, you know, he has become that because of his trust in God. But he had a lot of occurrences, like as you mentioned, where he didn't trust, he didn't have patience. So how do we, I guess, redeem the two? And you probably have hit on it a little bit, but there might be people who are like, man, you know, I did not trust in God and I made some mistakes and stuff like that. You know, like Abraham. Mm-hmm. I want to give you an opportunity to speak to that, of how do we redeem this guy who he has moments where he looks like he doesn't have faith and he looks like he's not a patient man. And God has called him to this work of being patient, and God has called him to be something more so than to do something. If we look at doing as in like physically doing something with their hands or anything like that, like he's called to trust. So how do we correlate that when he has these experiences where he doesn't trust, but yet he's still considered to be an example of faith?
Yeah, I mean, I think the key there is recognizing who is really in charge, who is really at work. You know, we have to remind ourselves of the sovereignty of God. At the end of the day, this isn't Abraham's plan. At the end of the day, it's not Abraham's work that accomplishes, you know, this miraculous wonder of Abraham, who has no children, being turned into a great nation. That's all God. It's all God. And so when we remind ourselves that God is truly the one at work, that God is truly the one with the plan, that God is truly the one who's in control, it takes a lot of pressure off us. Like, yes, we have responsibility to follow. We have responsibility we are held accountable to God for our actions. But at the end of the day, God's plan is God's plan. God is the one who's truly at work. And God is going to do work in spite of our failure. God is going to actually take our failure and transform it into good work. You know, I'm reminded of Romans 8:28, you know, that God works all things for the good of those who love him. You know, that's all things. It's not just the obedience. It's not just the wise decisions. It's the unwise decisions. It's the foolishness. It's the sin. That we have such a peculiar God who chooses to use our failures to do something wonderful. It's this strange upside down picture. And so I think that's the case for Abraham. You have a complicated person who at times has done evil things. And he is considered to be a man of faith, not because he did everything perfectly, far from it. He's considered to be a man of faith because at the end of the day, at the end of his life, he trusted that every moment of his life, the good and the bad, was in the hands of his creator, who initiated this relationship, who initiated this calling, and who had a plan that was far greater than Abraham. And it's the same with us, for each and every single one of us. You know, at the end of the day, at the end of our lives, we're just kind of this speck of dust, right? Floating through the universe, floating through time. But yet our creator has made us and has cared for us, and he's called us to a greater purpose, and he has a plan for us, you know, and he's going to hold us for all of eternity. And he's going to use us to do good things that truly matter in his kingdom. That's not on us. That's on him. And so it's a privilege and it's a wonder to pursue and to follow that God who doesn't leave us as meaningless specks of dust, but rather imbues in us a purpose and a calling that will last for all eternity. It really is just all about trusting that God, that he's the one who's truly at work, that he's the initiator, that he is going to keep his plan despite our failures. And that's what we see in Abraham. You know, God kept his promises. God kept every promise he made to Abraham despite his failure. And it's just because of his goodness and his grace.
So let's talk about this then, of that correlation between God wanting us to trust him and our own experiences. Like how can we build into us a greater trust in a faithful God? You know, rather than, I'm not saying for the argument of like, hey,
let me measure your trust and let me measure your your faith, like on a scale of 1 to 10, like, which is typically how we think of it, but it's ludicrous. You know, I say that because Jesus, you would say in the New Testament, he's like, it's not about having more faith. It's about having faith in a great God, not a greater amount of faith. You know, I'm thinking of the story with like the little mustard seed and that sort of deal. But I'm curious on how can we have a greater faith, or not a greater, how can we have a faith in a greater God? Like, how can we foster a greater feeling of trust in this God? And maybe... Yeah. Maybe this kind of needs to first talk about the relationship of doubt. Because I imagine, you know, Abraham had doubt. In fact, you can see stories of that, like Genesis 15, mm-hmm. where he's like, God, when is this going to happen? We've been here for like 10 years and I'm still don't have a kid. And when I did try to make a kid, it wasn't with my own wife. And we've caused some family drama over here. And I'm still waiting on you to keep your end of the bargain. And same thing kind of happens with Isaac and Jacob and even Joseph, of, you know, this correlation between, okay, they're choosing to have trust in this great God, but mm-hmm. there's still this moments of doubt, moments of questioning. So maybe we need to speak on that, you know, because there might be those who are listening right now. They're like, okay, it's one thing to say, trust God. And it's one thing to even read in the story saying, you need to trust God. But how do we correlate that with doubt? Because maybe you've experienced this. A lot of people think if you have any doubt, you're a terrible person and you don't really have faith. So I want to give you the platform to kind of talk about that, of, you know, maybe we need to talk a little bit about this. How do we wrestle with doubt? And then from there, how do we step more into the narrative of living in this patient trust in a faithful God who is greater than our circumstances and is working something out, more than trusting in ourselves? Because when we trust in ourselves, let's be honest, we make a lot of mistakes. And Abraham is a prime example of that. So maybe we need to back it up and talk about doubt here.
Well, I think talking about doubt, it is a great conversation, because a lot of people view doubt as the opposite of faith. They view doubt as the enemy of faith. But rather, I think doubt is the opportunity to develop your faith.
Oh, I like that.
Oh, that's our second preacher. That's our second preacher statement. Girl. We're going to clip that. We're going to clip that. No, doubt is the opportunity to develop your faith, because how do you grow your faith? How do you develop faith? How do you build faith? The way you develop faith is to have faith, and you can only have faith when your faith is actually tested. You know, I think of it like running. I like to run. You like to run. I'm pretty out of shape now, so you do a whole lot more running than I do, Mason.
I don't think so.
But you just did like a half marathon. What are you talking about?
That was like 2 years ago.
It doesn't. Okay, you know how many half marathons I've done? Zero.
Yeah, that was a terrible, terrible experience.
I'm out here just doing like 2 mile runs. So
yeah, I don't even know if I could do that right now.
For context, Mason and I both used to play soccer, so there was a time in our lives where we were running all the time, and neither of us play soccer anymore, but we still like to run, kind of. But anyway,
I like to tell myself I'm a runner but not actually run.
You know, when I talk to people about running, I tell them the only way to get better at running is to run. Like, that's one of the reasons why I love running, is it's just so simple. I know at the end of the day, if I want to get better at running, you know, if I want to go from running 2 miles to 3 miles, if I want to try to get a better 2 mile time or whatever, it's not ever for a lack of knowledge. I don't need to find, you know, the secret to running. At the end of the day, if I want to get better at running, I just got to do it more. I just have to run. I have to run, and I got to push myself. You know, if I want to go from running 2 miles to 3 miles, all that entails is me deciding, hey, today I'm not going to stop at 2 miles. I'm going to go to 3. And then if I wanted to go from 3 to 4, I'd have to make the decision, today I'm going to run 4. And it sucks. If you're not used to running 4 miles, running 4 miles sucks. It is painful and exhausting. And the only way you do it is to really push yourself and persevere. But if you do it, and if you do it over and over and over again, eventually running 4 miles becomes so easy. You know, I remember when I was playing soccer, like I would go on 4 mile runs all the time. There was a point in my life where I was running 16, 20 miles a week. I was just wake up, run 4 miles, and that was how I would start my day. Today, I can't do that. I can't do that at all because I'm so out of shape. But if I wanted to do that again, that's how I would have to do it. I would just have to run. I'd have to run and run and run and run. And so when we think about our faith life, how do I develop faith? Well, the answer is have faith. And you might be sitting there thinking like, but I don't know what that means. Well, it means every day, through every trial, through every circumstance, through every issue, whether it's a big issue or a little issue, whatever that issue is, you have to persevere and choose to have faith. So your moments of doubt, your moments of confusion, your moments of hardship, they're not signs that you have a weak faith. They're opportunities for you to persevere and develop faith. Those tests and those trials are the opportunities that God is giving you to grow your faith. I'm thinking of, you know, the father in Mark, who the father of the demon-possessed son, who asks Jesus, like, Jesus, please heal my son. Cast this demon out of him. And eventually the father says, I have faith. I do believe, but help my unbelief. You know, for that father, belief and unbelief aren't opposites. They coexist together. And he's telling Jesus, I do believe, I do have faith, but help my lack of faith. Help my unbelief. And that whole experience is a life-changing experience for that father and son that develop in them a greater faith. And so it's a daily practice. It's a seasonal practice. As you go through seasons of hardship, as you go through seasons where times are easy, you know, you just kind of have to take it day by day and take every situation that comes at you, whether it's good or bad, and see them as opportunities to develop faith by having faith in the midst of them. And you're not going to do it perfectly. That's okay. Just like every runner doesn't run perfectly. Sometimes you run out of breath. You have to stop. The important thing is that you keep going. And that's what we see in Abraham. Abraham messes up over and over and over again, but he doesn't quit. There are times where he fails hard, but he keeps trusting despite the moments where he fails to trust. And I think that that's how we develop faith.
Would you say it is easier or more difficult for us to have faith than it was for Abraham?
I don't know if that comparison is... I don't know. It's so different. It's so different. Like what we were talking about earlier, like we have the Bible, we have church history, we have all of this. I don't know. I mean, none of us are Abraham, so it's not like we can say... You know, oh, okay. This is actually a great conversation to have, though. Because every single one of us are unique. We all have our own unique circumstances, our own unique stories. For many of us, some things come easy. For others, those things come hard. It can be easy for us to want to compare ourselves to another person. It can be easy for us to get into that comparison trap and think like, man, God, why can't I have faith like so-and-so? Why can't I have faith like Philip or Steve or, you know, Joanna? I don't know. I'm just kind of making up names at this point. Like, why can't I have faith like them? Why does my faith have to be so difficult? I'm reminded of Silence, the book Silence, which all of you should go read. There's a character named Kichijiro who is just like, I'm so weak. I'm so weak. I'm so weak. And he asks God, he's like, God, why did you make me this weak? Like, why can I not be a person of strong faith? And Kichijiro is a good example of a person who runs the race to the very end, despite all of his failures. And in doing so is shown to be a person of faith. So I think we really need to try to avoid that trap of comparison and recognize that we're all on our own unique journeys. There are many things that when we look at other people, we might look and think that they have it easy, but we don't see the full story. And in fact, they might have it hard. There are some things that a person might have easy, but there are other areas of their life that are very difficult. You know, we're all just unique. We're all just unique. And your own unique experiences, the things that you struggle with, the things that you find easy, God has given you those things, whether it's hard or easy, to shape you to be a particular person for a particular purpose and calling. Every experience, good or bad, easy or difficult, there's intention behind it. We have to trust that verse in Romans, that God works all things for the good of those who love him. You know, we have to trust that verse, that every part of our lives, whether it's good or bad, God is uniquely working in us for our benefit so that we can do good work in the kingdom of God. You know, and that's a very unique thing to each and every single one of us.
I want to, you know, present two stories of the patriarchs that I think are worth discussing. Just to pick our brains about it and look at it. One of them is from Genesis chapter 15, where Abraham, you know, you get that moment where he's expressing his own doubt to God. Like, this is it. What's really cool, it's the first time that Abraham actually speaks back to God when God's like, hey, Abraham, I want you to know that I'm your shield, I'm your protector. And Abraham's response is, that's nice and all, God, but I don't have a kid and you haven't kept your promise so far. And I'm really concerned because if I die, everything I own is going to some other guy. And it's not going to be, you know, I don't see how your plan is moving forward. And so he's in that moment of wrestling with the doubts that we've kind of talked about. But God kind of lays out this big plan to him. He's like, here's what I'm doing and here's what I'm at work. And Abraham has this moment, it's like in verse 6 or 7, where it says, and Abraham, you know, believed, and it was counted to him as righteousness. And I want to speak a little, or like, have us talk about that a little bit, because if we're looking at the patriarchs and seeing that their primary work was to be something, primarily people of patience and trust, and here they are, you know, here's Abraham being declared righteous. He's being declared that he's in a right standing with God. And it's not based on anything he's done. Like, there's not even the Ten Commandments and the Torah and all the boundaries that God set of the laws. It's just purely on this trust. And I know Paul is going to lean heavily on this in like Romans 4 and 5 in a lot of ways. And James does as well. And so I just want to give us an opportunity to talk about this, because that's like the chapter, the story of Abraham that sets the stage for so much of the what it means to have a relationship with us. And so I want to give you an opportunity as well to talk about that, of what does that kind of mean and correlate for us when we oftentimes think, okay, for me to have faith or to be right with God, that means I have to do X, Y, Z. I have to go to church enough. I have to do enough good things. I have to, you know, and we can even bring that into our theology of work and living in our purpose. And we think, man, if I'm not doing something, therefore I'm a failure. And if, you know, if I haven't figured out what God has called me to, and therefore I'm not living in that calling, I must be a failure to this God. And yet here he presents a different model where the righteousness is based not on what we do, but trust that he has a plan and that he's working things out. And so I want to give you an opportunity to talk about that one. And then I can go ahead and bring up the second story I want to pick our brains on, or I can wait. It's up to you.
Cause I have something to say. And it goes back to Genesis 12, the very beginning of the story of Abraham. It's really important that we recognize God promises to bless Abraham and turn him into a great nation, before we hear anything about whether Abraham is actually going to follow or not. So let me read this again. Genesis 12, starting in verse 1. Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you. And I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great. You shall be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you, I will curse. And in you, all of the families of the earth will be blessed. There is a pretty big lack of like a conditional statement here. It's not a conditional statement. God is saying, I will bless you. I will make you a great nation, right? It's these, I will, I will, I will, I will, I will. The word if is never once shown in this passage. Never once. It's I will. And then we see in verse 4, so Abram went away as the Lord had spoken to him. So I think the answer to what you brought up is to recognize that God is the one who makes the promise. God is the one who does the work. We respond to what God has promised. We respond to what God has already done. That's the key. Is we have to trust that God is the one with the plan. God is the one who is sovereign. God is the one who is in control. God is the initiator. That's what it all boils down to. That our work is a response to the promises that God makes. Our work isn't the thing that actually accomplishes what God wants to do. Our work is a response to God saying what he's going to do. So our work is a response. It's not the source. It's not the cause. The work that we do is in many ways, you know, the effect of the cause. It's not the cause itself.
That's good. And I like the fact that you brought in the conditional things, because that actually leads into the next story. I think it's worth looking at with this idea of patience and faith and trust. It's in Genesis chapter 28 when Jacob has his encounter with God. So the story is Jacob has basically just blown up his family because he wanted what was supposed to be his brothers. And so he schemes and manipulates and causes things to just kind of blow up. He creates this big crisis in his family, gets what he wants, and he takes off running. And it's terrible. You know, think about this guy who all his life has probably heard about stories about Grandpa Abe had this encounter with God and he trusted and here's what God did for him. And oh, the same happened to your father. But that promise, that blessing, this story is going to pass into your brother who we just like him more than you. And so Jacob grows up with that. He does some stupid stuff, blows up his family, takes what he wants, runs to the wilderness. But in that encounter in chapter 28, he actually has this, his first encounter with this God of Abraham and Isaac, where God speaks to him and first shows him a vision of angels going up and down a ladder. And it's weird to us, but it's kind of like God saying, I know you just made a huge mistake. I know you just think, you know, here's this promised family and it's all shattered. It's in pieces, but don't worry. I'm still at work in the world and my plan is still moving forward. And then God kind of gives Jacob the promise that he gave to Abraham in similar ways. He's like, I'm going to protect you. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to work through you. And you're going to be part of my big plan of restoration. I know you are the biggest screw up possible, but I'm still working. But Jacob's response to that is rather unique. While Abraham trusted and it was counted to him as righteousness, Jacob puts conditions in place. And he starts to tell God in chapter 28, he's like, if you, God, do this for me, like if you bless me and you give me the financial status I want and you protect me and you give me the family I want and all this, and then keep me to the day I return back home, then I will worship you. And to sweeten the pot, I'll give you a tenth of what I earn. And so I want to talk about that. Like, why do you think it is in our human nature to struggle to trust, to struggle to have faith, and then to try to put conditions on it. Like, we can't just say, I trust this God. It's, I trust you, God, as long as you do X, Y, and Z for me. As long as you jump through these hoops, then I will know that you are a faithful, great God, and then I will trust you. Like, why do you think it is so difficult for us to simply trust God on his standards when we're so prone to say, well, if you do these things for me, then you'll have my trust and my faith?
I mean, the story of humanity is a story of distrust, right? Like, you go all the way back to the beginning in the garden. Did Adam and Eve trust God? No, they didn't trust God. They sinned against God. They took the fruit. They took good and evil into their own hands. So from day one, right, from the very beginning of the story, human beings struggle to trust God. They fail to trust God. It's in our DNA, right? It's from the beginning. And there's another story, you know, with Jacob that I love, that I think works really well with this conversation, is that there's this moment where Jacob wrestles with God, right? It's this great picture of the journey of faith. Right? That as we have faith in God, there are times where it's gonna feel like you're wrestling with God. Right? Where it's hard and it's difficult and it's a struggle and at times it's a battle and we don't even know who we're battling against. Are we battling against God? Are we battling against other things? You know? But that picture of Jacob wrestling with God is a picture that every single one of us can hold on to. Right? Like, it is hard. There's something inside of us, and many people would call it our sin nature, right? Or our depravity, right? But there's something inside of us where we struggle to trust, we fail to trust. And man, if the measure of our life is based on our ability to trust God, like, we are going to fail. We are going to fail. But praise be to God that we have a God who is full of grace, full of kindness, full of love for us, that will walk with us, that will wrestle with us. And at the end of the day, he will make us righteous, and that he will do a work in us that allows us to trust him, right? Like, we have to think about our relationship with God, not starting with us. God is the initiator. Go back to Genesis 12. God is the initiator, right? God is the one who is at work in us. It doesn't start with our trust. It starts with God. And then our trust in God is a process that goes on throughout the entirety of our life, that God will wrestle with us and shape us and form us and bring us through situations. He'll bring us through times of doubt. He'll bring us through times of hardship for the purpose of helping us develop trust and helping us develop faith. You know, it all goes back to God as the initiator. God is the one who's in control. You know, we have to be a people who patiently wait on the Lord. And that sounds, you know, simple, but it's not. It is a wrestling match. It is a lifelong process that we cannot do on our own, that we often fail at. Jacob fails at. You know, all of the patriarchs fail at it. They really do. But their life isn't boiled down to just one moment of failure. Their lives are boiled down to God in his grace, keeping his promises and working with these people throughout the entirety of their life.
I like that you mentioned that, because I think a lot of people kind of boil their entire life down into singular moments of, okay, I messed up here, so therefore I will always be this failure. I will always be this mistake. Or even on the flip side of, okay, I achieved this thing over here. And for some, it's like, okay, I have peaked and I will never achieve anything greater. Or, you know, I'm going to keep bringing it up. I'm going to be the 50-year-old talking about winning the state championship when I was a junior or senior in high school. And you know, that's how I still define myself, you know, 30, 40, 50 years later. And so I think that's, this is good to remember of, we're looking at a lifetime aspect of, you know, here's this God who wants to be in the hills and the valleys. And at the end of the day, you know, I don't want to assume or jump to the conclusion, therefore, and say, well, you know, hopefully you have more good than bad that outweighs, you know, or that more good outweighs the bad kind of stories. Because if that was the case, we're all going to fail when we look at a holy and righteous God. But it is in the beauty of this holy and righteous God who has come, and he has taken on the load of being faithful in the form of Jesus. And we have faith in that. If anything, that's the one pinnacle moment that defines all things, is that moment when we decide, I believe in this. I trust in this. Yeah, I'm going to have probably a lifetime of failing to walk in that trust and failing to live in that. But this is still going to redefine my entire narrative of, you know, maybe I'm circling a lot of trying to get at what I'm saying and talking out loud and thinking through this. But I think that's the encouraging thing with it. You look at the patriarchs is, you know, they constantly mess up, but their story is never defined by just one singular event. It's about a lifetime living and walking with this God. And sometimes they do really good things and they actually step out in faith and they trust his God, like Abraham and Isaac, with the whole story of, you know, after a lifetime of making mistakes and seeing how God has come back and redeemed him and fixed him and been there to rescue him. And then one day he wakes up and God's like, hey, you know what I want you to do tomorrow morning? I want you to go and sacrifice your son. And like the story goes that Abraham wakes up early and he starts walking and takes Isaac with him. And it's probably a multiple day journey. And it's this pinnacle of faith for him of an entire lifetime is boiled down to this experience. And that's the, I guess, the beauty of it. He only got there in some sense by failing and seeing this God who was still worthy of trusting when he failed to trust. There's a lot of encouragement in the patriarch story that we can look at for our own selves. For those who are listening, who you're like, man, I messed up and my life will never be redeemed because of this mistake. And it's like, well, you know, we still look at the patriarchs in a fond, positive example, even though they constantly failed, because the story wasn't really about them.
Yeah.
It was about the faithfulness of the God that they were choosing to trust. And that's the same thing for us of like in eternity, when we look at our lives in the scope of eternity, our lives in truth are not really about us. They're about this God. And are we having faith in him? Are we choosing to say, you know, yesterday I messed up, but he was still there with me. He is still here with me now. He promises to be with me tomorrow because of my faith in his son, Jesus. So I'm going to today walk in that. And I'm going to live in that patient work where things might not play out the way I want them to do. They certainly probably won't play out as quickly as I want them to play out. But I'm going to step into this work of being patient with this God, who has a story that's far bigger than my own tiny little blip in the story. And I'm grateful that he has invited me to be a part of his story. So I take a lot of encouragement from the patriarchs that way. So maybe when the very beginning, you're like, tell us your thoughts about the patriarchs and would you want to be them? And that sort of deal, I guess in some sense, talking through this, my opinion has shifted some, but at the same time, maybe deepened in other ways. because I can think back to my own life stories. And that might be a good segue at this point. You know, we've talked a lot about the faith of patience and trust, even in the midst of doubts, and even in a history of mistakes, and even in our own tendencies to try to put conditions on God to make him earn our faith and trust. Maybe we need to turn this to a more personal note of, like, you know, Alex, can you think of examples in your own life where you're like, I had to step out in faith in this, or here's where I blew it, and yet God was still faithful and trusting, and he still worked in spite of my mistakes. Or here's in the areas in my past where maybe I put conditions on God and said, you can only be trusted if you meet my conditions. And God kind of blew those conditions out of the water and still showed himself to be faithful. So I don't know if you have any personal stories that come to mind and that are worth sharing to kind of encourage our audience of, like, hey, we're not just talking about people who lived thousands of years ago. Like, these stories still have a way of playing out in our own lives, and a ways of, okay, we can see ourselves in Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and be able to be a voice of encouragement to others and say, hey, here's what happened to them. I see how it's happened in my own life. And here's where I want to encourage you to have trust in the faithfulness of Jesus.
Yeah. So Mason, I think the one that really comes to mind is an example for both of us. I mean, we're both currently in the process. Our wives are pregnant, right? We're expecting to have children very soon. I mean, at the time of this recording, Em and I are just a couple weeks out, really, from the birth of our next daughter. And you and Jody are still have, you know, a couple of months. It's not that far, really. And I mean, anyone who has had a child, who's gone through, you know, pregnancy, knows it's a long 9 months where you're waiting and waiting and waiting. And there are all kinds of ups and downs with that. I mean, especially if it's like your first time, which for us, neither of us, it's our first time. But I'm sure you can speak to just like the emotions you go through, fears and worries, concerns, all of that. You're going to all these doctor appointments. There's all kinds of complications, all of that. Like it's just a moment where there's nothing you can do. There is literally, literally nothing you can do, but just wait and trust, you know? And I think everyone who's gone through that experience of a parent knows that in a very real way.
Oh, yeah. And I can think of every one of the things we've talked about with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, having that play out, you know, even in the stories of, you know, our pregnancy with our first daughter, Harper, and now with our son, Micah. I don't know why I said first daughter as if I have more than one daughter. I only have one daughter at the time of this recording. unless it's like a president kind of thing, like first lady, first daughter, whatever. Everything, you know, I can see all the stories of the patriarchs, minus the one where Abraham went around telling people his wife was his sister because he was afraid for his life. I haven't had that occurrence. But the other aspects of, you know, questioning and doubt and, you know, that those moments of fear, sometimes even at the doctor's appointments of, are we going to get some terrible news at this doctor's appointment? You know, and how would we handle it? And, you know, and then thinking about in the future of, you know, like for me, I'm wrestling that with these thoughts lately of, I'm going to be responsible for raising a man now in this world. And even in the play on with Jacob of the temptation to try to put conditions on God of, you know, feeling like, God, if you give us a healthy baby, you know, I'll be better equipped to raise a man or to be a good father and husband. You know, these things naturally just pop in your mind. So I think pregnancy is a good one because we're both kind of right there at the finish line. Like you're within, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. We're a month out. And so it's, yeah, I think that's a good one that kind of relates of you kind of read the patriarchs and you're like, oh, I can understand why they made some stupid mistakes, because we all make, especially men, make stupid mistakes during that time frame as you're processing, because you can't do anything.
Like, no, you can't. It's brutal.
You're just sitting on there on the outside and you're just like, all I can do is this work of being
patient. Yeah, that's all you can do. Because there's nothing you can do other than wait and trust and be patient. And I think that's, I mean, that's the take home. It's the take home for today, is that the first work of the Christian, the first calling, is to patiently wait on the Lord. That's not doing nothing. That is an active work that we all have to do every single day. And not only that, but it has got to be like this overarching characteristic of the story of our life, because that is how Abraham gets to the end and is considered righteous, as having a life despite the ups, despite the downs, despite the successes, despite the failures, took on the work of patiently waiting on the Lord. And so the same has to be for us. That's not doing nothing. It's the active work of every Christian, is to patiently wait on the Lord. Thank you for listening to the Archippus Podcast.
If you enjoyed this podcast, we would appreciate it so much if you would share what you thought of it. Leave a review, leave a like, a 5-star rating. That so much helps us to promote this podcast, to share the word, and be an encouragement to others.
And if you want to support the project in other ways, you can check out our website, archippushouse.com. There we have several different resources that you can check out. And we even made some merch. We made some t-shirts and hats with our logo. Getting any of that helps financially support the project. And it's just a fun extra way to help share and invite others to check out the project.
And if you go to archippushouse.com, there you can also sign up for our mailing list. And if you join our mailing list, we promise to send you multiple free copies of our books. So if you like free books and you like our books, join our mailing list and we will send you our books for free just for being a fan.
Thanks again for engaging with and supporting the project. And we hope to see you next time.